Well, good morning again. We come to our second psalm, which is Psalm 10. It follows on from the psalm we looked at yesterday, Psalm 9, which I entitled A Word for Those Who Rule, or Those Who Lead, those in positions of power or authority. Here, it is largely a word for those who are oppressed. Now, the psalm does have something to say about the oppressors, but this is of particular encouragement to those who suffer. It's a psalm that is often before me as I travel in countries where Christians really are oppressed. Many of them suffer terrible indignities at the hands of those who rule them. They are ripped off by the rich and the powerful and the influential round about them. In other cases, the governments are very inhospitable. Sometimes these people must cry out, "How long, O Lord, how long?" And this is a psalm of encouragement to all of those who are oppressed. Because it does seem at times as if God stands idly by, just lets the enemy do what they want. It's as if these people of power and influence and wealth can just oppress the poor, trample on the poor, rip off those who have no means of defense. Well, this psalm is an encouragement to us that God is still on the throne and God does remember his own. Now, as yesterday, I just got 5 points that I want to make. Not because there's anything magic about the figure five, but I thought, oh well, two talks, two mornings, two lots of five, it's a fairly simple way to look at these two psalms. I'm not going to read through the whole psalm as I did yesterday and come back and just highlight the 5 points. I've actually categorized these 5 points in progression as we go through five groups of verses. And the first group of verses, well, the first two groups really, concern the oppressors, those who oppress other people. The next two groups of verses refer to those who are oppressed. So we look at the oppressors, and then we look at the oppressed, and then we come to the finale in the final group. So let's look at the first group, starting in verse 1. As I just mentioned, it seems as if God stands afar off. Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Why do you stand afar off? In arrogance, the wicked hotly pursue the poor. So this is my first point. The oppressors are arrogant. That's the first point. Oppressors are arrogant. By definition, they are arrogant. They think they're invincible. They think they can do anything. They are all powerful. Nobody can resist them. In their arrogance, the wicked hotly pursue the poor. Let them be caught in the schemes which they have devised. It's a reflection of what we saw yesterday in Psalm 9. These people think that because God does not act in judgment against them immediately, that he hasn't noticed, that they've got away with it, that they're not going to have to face the consequences of their own wrongdoing. God is powerless, they're thinking to themselves. But of course, we are told in the Bible that the forbearance of God, the patience of God, is meant to lead us to repentance. Then don't mistake his forbearance for approval. Don't mistake his lack of intervention for a lack of power. He has the power, but in his grace he does not always come in and act immediately against those who do wrong. If he did, of course, none of us would be here today, because all of us have done wrong, and if God came in and dealt with us according to our wrongdoing immediately, every time, then we would have vanished off the face of the earth long ago. God is merciful. The trouble is, people mistake his forbearance. They presume upon his forbearance, as says elsewhere in the Bible. But one day they will find that things catch up. And so they boast in verse 3 of the desires of their heart. They are greedy for gain. They curse the Lord. They renounce the Lord. And in the pride of their face in verse 4, they say, "There is no God." There is no God. It's a myth. It's just something that children have made up. It's something to comfort the hearts of certain sorts of people. It really is just a fairy tale. There is no God. And so the wicked become more and more arrogant because God does not act against them immediately. Here is the wicked in verse 5. His ways prosper at all times. That's the way it seems. You look around and you see all these people who are capitalizing on the opportunities, making themselves rich at the expense of others. But your judgments, O God, are on high, and they're out of his sight. He can't see what God is doing. He can only see the next step ahead, which is more power, more prosperity, more of something for himself. And as for his foes at the end of verse 5, he puffs at them. And so he thumbs his nose at God. He said he's out of sight, he can't see. His enemies, he just gives them the raspberry, he just thumbs his nose, spits on the ground. He thinks in his heart, I shall not be moved, this is verse 6, I shall not be moved. Throughout all generations, I shall not meet adversity. I have all of these backups, I have all of these insurance schemes, I have ample to look after myself, I have power, and really, I'm in a good secure position from here on. That's the way the arrogant oppressors see themselves. Which brings you to my second point, how they now exploit the helpless, which is from verse 7 through to verse 9. Greed, lying, deceit, these are the characteristics of these oppressive people. His mouth filled with cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue, mischief and iniquity. He sits in ambush in the villages. In hiding places, he murders the innocent. A reflection of the times of David. We have more sophisticated ways of doing these things today, but they do ambush you at times. They do lay traps to catch the unwary, to rip off people, and to advance themselves and take advantage of the helpless. His eyes stealthily watch for the hapless. Verse 9. He lurks in secret like a lion in his covert. He lurks that he may seize the poor. He seizes the poor and he draws him into his net. We have very sophisticated organizations in some of the developed countries of the world that have ways and means of getting unsuspecting people into their net and making themselves wealthy. It might be very impersonal because it's done in the name of a business or a company, and the people behind these schemes don't feel any personal guilt because it's the company that's doing it, it's the business that's doing it, it's the operation that's doing it, it's the government or it's the bank or whatever impersonal system they can hide behind. You and I have got to be very careful that we don't do in the name of an organization what we would never do personally. That we will not do in the name of a government or a system or a business something that we would be ashamed of if we did it personally. The same ethics must apply corporately as apply individually. So that's the second point. The oppressors afflict and exploit the helpless. The third point, coming down to verse 10, because of this, the oppressed lose heart. That's verse 10. The hapless is crushed. And he sinks down and falls by his might. Why? Because, verse 11, he thinks in his heart. When it says he thinks in his heart, it's the arrogant, it's the oppressors, the wicked, that are being spoken of here. The wicked thinks in his heart, God has forgotten. He said in his face, he'll never see it. Now this is a progression from verse 4. First of all, he said there is no God. Now he says, well, if there is a God, he's forgotten. He doesn't see it. And so it boils down to the same thing. They just believe they can do as they like because God is not in all their thoughts. Because of this, they can the more easily crush the poor, the more confident they can become, the more they think they have escaped judgment, and the oppressed lose heart. That's what it says in verse 10. They sink down as if crushed. But I think many of us have felt that way at times. The fleeting thought comes to you that God has forgotten, that God hasn't taken any notice. Jeremiah, he had these feelings. Job had these feelings. Moses had these feelings. Many great men of God had those sorts of feelings. But there is something that follows in my fourth point. And that is, we ought not to lose heart because there still is hope in God. Indeed, he is our only hope. God is our only hope, verses 12 to 14. And so, because God is not indifferent to what is going on, he's not indifferent to the arrogance of the oppressors, nor is he indifferent to the suffering of the oppressed. He has silently been taking notice. And therefore, in verse 12, the psalmist can say, arise, O Lord, O God, lift up your hand, forget not the afflicted. Earlier I said that because judgment is not exercised against wrongdoing, therefore the hearts of people are fully set to do evil. That's the evildoers. But the other side is that because God does not exercise judgment immediately, therefore sometimes the hearts of his people become despondent. That is the case here. That's what's reflected in these couple of verses. But it is a fleeting thing. It doesn't last forever. We all know that. We have these feelings that come in. We just feel as if, what's the point? We drop our bundle, we lose heart. But then we come back and we cast ourselves upon God. Cast your care upon him, because he does care for you. Arise, O Lord, lift up your hand. Don't forget the afflicted. Why does the wicked renounce God? I'm in verse 13 now. Why does he say in his heart, you will not call me to account? This is the third thing we've now seen the wicked say. Firstly, they said there is no God. Then they said God is forgotten. Now they say God will not call me to account. They think they can do as they wish. But God does see, verse 14, yes, God does take note of this trouble and vexation, that he would take it into his hands. God sees it and he will take it into his hands. Cast your care upon me. I will take your burden from you, he says. The hapless, verse 14, commits himself to God. In you, God, he says, I find one who is a helper of the fatherless, the defenseless. The fatherless, of course, were particularly vulnerable to exploitation. All of those who are vulnerable or oppressed, God knows about it. And so the arrogant can never triumph. And if they cannot triumph over God, then ultimately they cannot triumph over his people. They might be able to advance themselves by oppressing others, but their punishment is certain. And that is the theme of the final group of verses 15 to 18. God upholds the oppressed and he deals with the oppressors. Break the arm of the wicked. Break the arm of the evildoer, O Lord. Seek out his wickedness until it's all gone. In other words, eradicate it by eradicating him. Getting rid of the evil by punishing the evildoer. The Lord is king forever, verse 16. And the nation shall perish from his land. That's the note of triumph. That's what upholds you and me, no matter what our circumstances. The Lord is king forever. Those who trust in themselves will be destroyed, whereas those who trust in God will be delivered. O Lord, verse 17, you will hear the desire of the meek. It's the meek who will inherit the earth. The meek at present seem to get walked all over by the arrogant. But it won't be the arrogant who will inherit the earth, because the arrogant will be exterminated. It is the meek who will inherit the earth. You will hear the desires of the meek, and you will strengthen their heart, and you will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and to the oppressed, so that man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. The evil people, their days are numbered. God is on the side of righteousness. And those who trust in him, they can be assured of his deliverance, of his sustaining power. He cares for his people.